I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, America's image abroad continues to take a beating. We'll talk about why. But first, historically, Americans have viewed Great Britain as a largely white society. You know the images, the Queen, the tea, crumpets, and all that. But that was never the full picture. Blacks from the Caribbean and Africa, as well as South Asians, have been emigrating to England, Scotland, and Ireland for generations. The past decade in particular has seen an explosion of immigration to Britain, and millions of non-white, non-Christians now call the United Kingdom home. Muslims from Pakistan alone, for example, now number nearly 600,000 in England and Wales, according to Great Britain's 2001 census. But such fast-moving changes have sparked the predictable tensions, and recent terrorist incidents in London and Scotland, which investigators attribute to Islamic extremists, are renewing concerns about how immigrants are assimilating into British society. Now, with a new prime minister on board, many Brits of color wonder what the future holds for them. Joining us now to talk about this is Gary Young. He's a columnist at The Guardian newspaper, and he's at our NPR bureau in London. Gary, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
The attempted car bombings are certainly an inauspicious way to start a new administration, and yet England's new Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, cautioned against anti-Muslim backlash. Is that considered kind of pro forma now in public life in England, or is that something important?
It is considered pro forma, although the way he did it was actually new from the way that Blair used to do it. Blair would say, we don't want any backlash, but moderate Muslims, decent Muslims, have to speak out, and this is a cancer on a religion, and so on and so forth. Whereas the Brown government have been deliberately, I've been told, conscious, they haven't mentioned Islamic or Muslim once in their descriptions of the bombing. They have talked about a perversion of faith and so on, but they've kept the words Muslim and Islamic out of any discussion of these attacks, which is nothing but interesting. I mean, nobody knew that, you know, that would happen, but it's been very conscious.
Why do you think he did that?
Well, I mean, there are a few reasons. One is, I mean, the long story of Brown and Blair, you know, Brown wanting to take over from Blair for a long, long time, is he's trying to make a distinction between himself and the previous administration. Secondly, Blair was, unusually for Britain, a publicly quite religious figure, whereas Brown is a privately quite religious figure and therefore is going to, I think, articulate religion in a different way. And thirdly, because I think they realized that the rather pious way in which Blair would say these things actually didn't work.
That's interesting. So I was going to ask you whether British Muslims felt that Tony Blair was singling them out for sort of racial or ethnic reasons when he called upon moderate Muslims to speak out against these perversions of faith, as he and other leaders have called it. But what you're telling me is that he saw that as an extension of his own sort of public religiousness, that he was calling upon other people of faith as a person of faith to speak out.
I think he was. I mean, the attitude of many, I wouldn't say all, but many Muslims to the Blair government was there were two things going on. One is that Muslims in Britain, unlike in America, where Muslims are actually, on average, earn more than the average American and are professional, most Muslims in Britain came in a pattern of migration which had them concentrated in old mill towns and in industries that have collapsed in the past 20, 25 years. So you have a very kind of working class, alienated group of people. So there was that going on, a desire for economic redress that they wanted Blair to talk about. But the second thing, which is always the elephant in the room at the moment with these conversations, was Iraq. That say, look, you are the person who, this is how the conversation would go, who lied to us about Iraq, who's killing Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now you're telling us to be peaceful. You're talking to us about British values, but we see those values acted out abroad, and we don't like them.
I wanted to ask you, just to give us the big picture of that many Americans still see England primarily as, you know, the royal family, you know, Princess Diana and so forth, but it's actually far more multicultural, I think, than perhaps many Americans understand. It's about, what, 30% non-white, non-Christian as a country? Is that about right?
It's about 30% in London. In the country as a whole, it's between 10 and 12. but they're concentrated, we are concentrated in the major cities. And, yeah, Black Britain, there's long been a Black British presence ever since slavery. First racial riots were in 1919. The first Black MP was in 1921. So we've there's MP being like a congressman. So there's long been a Black presence in Britain, but the real increase came after the Second World War, when Britain needed people to do jobs that white Brits wouldn't do, and so people came from the colonies. Like my mother came from Barbados. And they came with British passports, actually, because they were, at the time, British citizens. This is before independence. And so the refrain that we've had in our generation, when people would say, oh, you should go back to where you came from and so on, is we're here because you were there. You know, the patterns of migration into Britain reflect the patterns of colonialism out of Britain in the 19th century. Now we're at a stage of about 10 or 12%, among them a number of lords, barons, baronesses. The Formula One racing, the guy who's leading the Formula One racing league at the moment, Lewis Hamilton, young Black man who actually came from my hometown. Half of our soccer team is Black. You know, so particularly in sports and music and the arts, a very high visual presence, but nonetheless, many of the statistics that you will recognize in America, higher rates of unemployment, higher rates of homelessness. Two, I would say, key distinctions between Black Britain and Black America. One would be the levels of integration, and here I'm talking about Afro-Caribbean, in particular, and African. One in two Caribbean men and one in three Caribbean women are in relationships with white people. And then the other is a class structure, that we really don't have a Black middle class. We have Black middle-class individuals, but not a class. All of our parents, or nearly all of our parents, came over to sweep floors, be nurses, bus conductors, train drivers, and so on. And the British class system doesn't allow for any kind of rapid kind of escalation up the ranks. So still, by and large, a working-class experience.
So how do the Afro-Brits relate to this discussion around the Muslim community and how, as we were discussing earlier, that Tony Blair sort of calling upon moderate Muslims to, in essence, police their own community and stuff. How do the other ethnic communities relate to that? Do they see that as a criticism of them as well, or do they see the sort of Muslim Arabs as being yet another community apart?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, on the one hand, there is this sense of it being a community apart, and in that way, you could compare it in America to conversations about immigration, which African Americans can take part in, but there is a certain amount of ambivalence, a certain amount that they are talking about somebody else. And so that's certainly true for Afro-Caribbean. And yet, the way that these conversations usually go is they start with Muslims and terrorism and so on, but they lead into our multicultural model has failed, that we need, and this is something that Brown has called on, a Britain Day. We need to... we need more glue to keep this country together. And there is a sense that the things that are making it fray are bound up in racial, ethnic difference. And so in that sense, there is a kind of feeling of an undertow that many Afro-Caribbean and African people have, that ultimately they are really talking about all of us, even though these people happen to be in the front line. It's one joke that I often tell, which is that when I was growing up, Afro-Caribbeans were regarded as a problem, and people would say, why can't you be more like the Muslims? They keep themselves to themselves. They don't want to marry our daughters. They don't play their music too loud. And now they point to the Muslims and they say, why can't you be more like these Caribbeans? Why don't you want to marry my daughter? Why won't you play your music loud like the rest of the kids? And so on. So it's this sense of Muslims being a world apart.
Too much apart.
Ultimately, they're always talking about all of us.
Was this talked about during the campaign, that Gordon Brown's ascendancy to the Prime Minister's office? Is there a sense that that's going to be one of the tasks of his administration to get the country to cohere? And what are some of the things that are being discussed as to how that can happen?
It is actually. It's curious how it's going to pan out. I can't really say, but it's definitely high on Brown's agenda. There's this idea of British Day, and he keeps talking about British values. Now, only 2 days ago, he launched some constitutional reforms, which didn't have, you know, race wasn't at the top of it. It actually wasn't anywhere in the agenda. But there's this idea that he wants to modernize the British state, which, when you think that, you know, our government is Her Majesty's government, Her Majesty's opposition, in order to become Prime Minister, Brown had to go to the Queen and say, can I lead the government? And then the Queen says, yes, go ahead. That Britain is in severe need of modernization as a political entity. And so he wants to modernize the British kind of constitutional makeup. And part of that modernization, in his mind, is creating a sense of common citizenship that all Britons have to buy into in order to draw out of. Hence the Britishness Day, the sense of, he keeps trying to instill a sense of common British values. He was heavily involved in an arts initiative for cultural leadership amongst minorities, which was all about promoting a sense of cohesive and yet variegated Britishness. So it's something that is quite high on his agenda. And interestingly, one of the reasons why it has to be high on his agenda is because he's Scottish.
Okay. Interesting, Gary. Gary, listen, I understand that you're usually in New York, but right now you're visiting London. I hope you'll talk to us again and keep us up to date on what's going on over the water.
Hope so.
Okay. That was Gary Young, U.S. columnist for The Guardian newspaper. He joined us from London. Gary, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks a lot, Michelle.